Hi, and welcome to episode number 22 of Circuit Breaker Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jax, and I've got president and co-founder of Internet of Things America, or IoT America, Pete DeNagy.
Hi, Jax. Welcome. So, thanks for having me.
Pete, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you end up with IoT America? We all know you as Mr. IoT, so now you're even going even bigger.
I'm tripling down on IoT. Yeah, so it's a really interesting story. Being that I'm on the TIA advisory board for IoT and the former chair of the IoT Forum for North Texas, I get asked to speak a lot at conferences. I was the closing keynote speaker at the Rural Broadband Association conference in St. Louis in April of 2017. Steve Pistorkovic, who is the Vice President of Technology of NTCA, asked me to do this, and I'm on the TIA advisory board with him. So I was going over how rural broadband carriers will make money in 2020, and we were talking about traditional topics, NFV, SD-WAN, SDN, GPON, G.fast, and then we started talking about LPWAN. Now, rural broadband companies are charted with delivering broadband access to rural America, to farmhouses, as you will.
This is part of what originally was known as the Tennessee Valley Act or something like that?
No, so NTCA is, stood for the National Competitive Telephone Association. It's the old small telephone companies. Now, they do broadband predominantly, so they've kept the acronym NTCA, but they now call themselves the Rural Broadband Association. Okay, and they have about 832 members nationally. So it's a large organization of small broadband companies of anywhere from 2,000 to 20,000 subscribers. So I closed the conference by asking a question. There were about 500 people in the audience. I said, how many of you are looking at LPWAN technology? Out of an audience of 500, five men raised their hands. I said, wow, that's bad, because rural broadband can be so impacted with LPWAN technology, low-powered wide area network. So I asked them, okay, five of you are thinking about this. How many of you actually are instantiating a pilot? Two of them raised their hand. And then I asked, do you both work for the same company? And they said, yes. So in essence, one company was doing this. So on my plane ride home, I was thinking, why aren't rural broadband companies looking at augmenting their fiber deployment to the farmhouses and bringing in low-power to wide-area network technology to provide sensor connectivity in the farm?
Well, and that's a huge piece of it, right?
That's huge piece.
Always been the case. Is it's always been a hub and spoke model is better. Just nobody can seem to figure it out. And with LPWAN technology, we're able to move that hub and spoke technology just that much further to the edge.
Well, that's right, because broadband will give you, 100 meg E to the farmhouse or to the to the connected infrastructure. Wi-Fi will give you 200 meters around the farmhouse. That does little good on the 10,000-acre farm. It does very little good on the 20,000-acre ranch.
And you don't need that much, to your point, right? You just said 100 meg, 200 megabits per second for Wi-Fi, all of these great high-speed technology, but that's not what you need for a sensor that's just telling you moisture readings or just basic stuff of where the cows are or what their
The applications are endless, and they're so important, right? On a 10,000-acre ranch, okay, and a farmer would have 30 to 50 tanks, some of them water, some of them propane, some of them diesel, for the farm equipment, right? It takes a rancher 2 to 3 hours every day to drive around the ranch to see if the tanks are empty or full. If you had IoT, low-powered, small, narrow-band, small-packet technology, you can look on your iPad back at the farmhouse and say, Tank 6 is empty. Go fill tank 6. All the other tanks are full. Okay, I've just taken 3 hours and made it 15 minutes. Okay.
Well, you've taken 3 hours, made it 15 minutes, but there's a lot more to that. You don't want necessarily a certain type of tank going all the way empty. Specifically like gas and diesel and propane, things like those. You don't want those tanks going empty. That's a bigger liability.
I was speaking in Fargo, North Dakota a couple of weeks ago, and I heard a really tragic story. A rancher went on vacation, made sure that all his water tanks were full. He had a herd of 240 cows, so it was very warm, and he was gone for 4 days. Well, four of the tanks went empty. Unfortunately, were the four tanks where the cows were. The cows weren't, you know, able to get to the other tanks. When he came back from vacation, he had 240 dead cows. Now, the average cow is $1,500 to $2,000 per, which means that rancher had a $500,000 loss. Had they had some very simple sensors on some very simple tanks with some very inexpensive LPWAN connectivity, you know, those 240 cows, you know, would be available to be a cash crop.
Well, not only that, but then also the cash he's lost, the time he's lost, and also it could have been an easy, hey, call the rancher next door and quickly get those refilled or whatever, however he normally gets them refilled. That could have been done. Wells can be automated this way as well, right? You've got command and control functions to refill some of the, for the more basic things like water and various other like grain.
Absolutely. Dispensaries. I mean, the use cases are tremendous, right? In row crops or growers, pH, the temperature, the, you know, acidity of the soil,
weather,
absolutely the weather conditions, the moisture content of the soil, right? Do I irrigate? Do I not irrigate? You know, the amount of fertilizer, the nitrogen content. So many things could be taken advantage of. For livestock, you have health applications, temperature, stress, heat, and heat in two ways, whether they're hot and whether they're ready to be bred, right? The ability to go forward and see if someone's distressed. Geolocation is available with LPWAN technology as well. There are lots and lots of applications you can go further. Infrastructure on the farm or the ranch, right? Gates, outbuildings, closures, as we mentioned, tanks, meters, water meters, electric meters, gas meters, CO meters.
Fence maintenance is a huge thing because you have to go ride around the entire fence perimeter and see if it's broken. Sending a little low voltage, not even enough to like even anybody to notice, even if they touch it, but just enough of a line that goes along the entire fence and know where that cow is getting out.
Yeah, the applications are just sheer and vast. You know, let's say a ranch would have 30 outbuildings. If you put CO and or fire or smoke detectors using LPWAN, at that point you can go forward and monitor them. And instead of noticing that there's a fire when the building is consumed, you can notice that there's smoke before something happens and do something with the structure. You know, the applications are very, very, you know, sophisticated and able.
So then the question becomes, I hear Alabama is your next big target. So what's the big announcement for Alabama?
Yeah, so we actually, this actually showed up in RCR Wireless the other day in their Enterprise IoT Insights segment. We're partnering with NextGen, which is a WISP, a wireless internet service provider, and we're going to be deploying in 48 counties of rural Alabama LPWAN gateways. We're using LoRaWAN as the LPWAN technology, and for that we are going to be able to basically provide near full connectivity to those 48 counties for all the rural applications. So a farmer can go and get the solution of their choice and connect them to the network. A rancher can get the solution of their choice and connect it to the network. And the beautiful thing about what IoT America is doing is we're providing connectivity, or we're managing cellular. If somebody has cellular, we'll manage their cellular capabilities as well. And please note, LPWAN can be, of course, NB-IoT, Cat-M1, 2G, 3G, LTE, you know, a plethora of connectivity options, Wi-Fi, and we'll manage that too. We provide 7x24x365 managed services for that, so we'll certainly tell people when their network is working or not, which is very important when you're dealing with livestock or farms, which basically are 7x24. We also provide a full catalog marketplace of solutions. So farmers and ranchers don't have to go and engineer their own solutions. They can look at the catalog and say, oh, this solution provides this value and this ROI with sizing parameters and sensor options, and they can go forward and procure them right out of our marketplace. And then at that point, we also will store the data so that when the data comes in, it comes into our cloud instance, the solutions API, make an API call, a RESTful call, into our cloud, pull the data, extract the data, and then we can go forward and manage it therein.
So where can a farmer go find these, right? You're going with next-gen wireless. So they just walk in the next-gen store, or is it online? I mean, what's the best place for these farmers to sign up?
Yeah, so next-gen is a WISP, so they're providing wireless internet service. So they'll actually be putting together a complete marketing plan for all the 48 counties of rural America. And inside the marketing plan, we actually will be going forward and working with them. We have a meeting coming up in September with Kay Ivey, who's the governor of Alabama, and with Doug Jones, who's the freshman senator from Alabama as well, to be talking about this. And concurrently, we're also working with Auburn University and the Tuskegee Institute.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So that will be, you know, instantiating their solutions as well. We see this as quite the academic endeavor, and we've reached out to several universities across the United States, mostly the ag schools.
That's exciting. So then next question, you just mentioned September. September is Mobile World Congress America.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're attending. What are you looking forward to the most at the conference?
So, you know, IoT has a lot of value. So we're obviously looking at what CTIA and GSMA are going to be putting together for their displays. We are an alliance member of the LoRa Alliance.
They have a huge booth.
Correct? Yes, and we'll actually be have some small presence in the LoRa Alliance booth, and as well as, you know, our logo prominently displayed there. So we're very excited about that. And additionally, we'll also be partnering. So the Rural Wireless Association also has several events that we'll be partaking in as well. So we are going to be going forward and fulfill the value proposition of rural America. You know, one of the things I want to note also, we've been talking about growers and ranchers. We will be providing solutions for small towns too. You know, we always talk about smart cities, and smart cities have great promise for America, but the promise is equally as great for the small town in America.
Oh, absolutely. It's a much bigger problem, right? Because they're usually the ones who are either A, very much left behind, or very ahead of the curve. The best example right now that's a great solution that just got released here in the Dallas area is Lovejoy ISD is using the little panic buttons that are essentially this low power wide area network.
The applications are, you know, endless, right? You know, alert systems in schools, the ability to go forward and turn on and off school lighting systems, LED lighting systems, monitor traffic control systems, to go forward with municipal garbage and know when indeed the garbage is full, the garbage is empty. You can reduce truck rolls, reduce emissions, right? You know, one of the things that's really big for small town America is water, gas, and electric meters, right? By using LoRa for, you know, water, gas, and electric meters, you now can, you know, maximize your manpower utilization.
Well, not only that, but especially in the water, we had a couple of episodes back, we had the folks from Capstone Metering, And they were saying how difficult it is to pinpoint where water was leaking from various different municipalities. And now we're getting to save it. The other big, huge thing you mentioned, and I know this is coming back from small city and ags and things like that, but it's a combination thereof. And I always had this question, especially evidently recently, it's been disastrous in California with all the wildfires, right? So now you've got two major portions of it. California, as much as people think it's Hollywood and San Francisco and LA, and even this year, the Mobile World Congress show is in LA, but you look at it, it's a lot of ag. You've got all the nut growers and a lot of Florida produce like avocados, and a whole lot more than we realize comes from the grocery store, comes from California, not just Florida. And then also on top of that, we've got great wines that come from there as well, right? Napa Valley. So are you seeing...
Please don't forget Sonoma as well. They do fine there too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, all of California, right? Northern California specifically for their wines. You're right. Sonoma and Willamette County and things like that up north. But as these wildfires are affecting them, are you seeing an uptick in them as a rebuild coming up online with more connectivity?
Clearly, the value proposition of monitoring for wildfires using LPWAN technology is real.
Right.
There's some challenges, of course. So LoRa, which is predominantly what we use, we don't care. We're happy to use Sigfox and/or Waitlist, and you know any other technologies therein. NB-IoT, it matters very little to us. The issues at hand, of course, is the propagation of wireless through a forest has to be engineered pretty well. So to monitor smoke and fire in a forest, you have to monitor the canopy. And then the gateway has to be high above the canopy so you can go forward and go through that. Because obviously if you did that at 100 feet and the trees are at 150 feet, you're going to diminish the amount of range that you have. LPWAN has very good range in ideal conditions. Well, from an SLA perspective, we always say it has a 10-kilometer radius, which is about 6.2 miles, which is about 75,000 acres. So we're really happy with that. There have been people who have put it on very tall towers with good power and have gotten 50 kilometers. Now, we're never going to say that, but...
Well, you just did.
But we're not going to go put that in an SLA.
Fair enough.
Yes, fair. But in Kansas or North Dakota, it's going to run great and far. If you put it into, you know, Tennessee and in, you know, the foothills and the Appalachian, it's not... You're going to have a lot of propagation issues because of terrain.
No, that's fantastic. So, no, I'm more thinking as they rebuild because the wineries were lost last year, and there are a couple wineries that are coming up online. Are you seeing traction in those wineries picking up and saying, okay, look, well, we lost the winery. We lost where the fields were, right? So they're now regrowing. So as they're rebuilding that portion of it or the houses with the crush rooms and all of those things, are you seeing them retrofit technology into these rooms that they're rebuilding from the fires?
Oh, absolutely. And California has been the leading state in America for agricultural IoT. So they've already instantiated a lot of this, but now they're doing it more robustly. And that actually took place because of 2018 legislation that came to pass where the state is actually now taxing water runoff. So when you mentioned the growers up in the valleys, in the Central Valley in California, they typically access their water through wells, which, of course, aren't taxed.
Right.
Right, through municipal infrastructure. But yet that has great impact in the overall water table, and the water table drops.
Well, so and it has impact even outside of California, right? Because other states were complaining that...
Yes, absolutely. So with regard to the new legislation... now, all of a sudden, growers are very, very concerned with proper utilization and state-of-the-art irrigation capabilities. The number one water crop in America is the tree crop, the almond and the walnut crop in California. Now, with precision watering technologies, you can cut the watering down 67% of an almond tree if you just, you know, precisely apply the water, which would be very impactful. But there's been no reason for the California farmers to do that until now. Another thing that's very interesting, there's another breed of new farmer with a new cash crop that's also been very, you know, they have been very strong in deploying and implementing IoT for precision agriculture. And of course, that would be the cannabis.
Well, and they're also the leaders in aquaponics, hydroponics. They also have other issues, which you're right. I mean, absolutely. They're much more precise. And not just that, but to your point, right? So now we're taking smart building stuff and putting it into inside warehouses, because these guys don't necessarily grow outside. They want to be a lot more secure. They're also dealing with a lot of other issues. So now they're dealing with things where they're doing smart building HVAC. They're doing smart building lighting. They're doing smart building connectivity.
Right.
There's various other things that they're doing that's a lot more controlled than a normal farmer's ever had to deal with, just by sheer fact of what by sheer nature of their business. So Absolutely, they're way leading the curve on a lot of the connectivity, and it's fascinating.
Yeah, as was stated in the recent Forbes AgTech conference, and yes, Forbes is covering this marketplace, right? It's a very, very, you know, it's, please note, you know, there are REITs associated to this. There are, you know, lots of intelligent money going into this. This is not a passing phase. And the adoption is great, and candidly speaking, the number one attraction for the deregulation from a state level is a new basis for tax revenues. Okay, so there are a lot of states who are very interested in doing this, but the in California, as I understand, you're only allowed to grow 99 plants. Now that's the downside. The upside is one plant is large; it grows to about 24 feet. So it can, you know, it has a tremendous yield. So you want to make sure that you maximize the value out of said cash crop. So people are very, very, are very akin to this.
Right. And they want to make sure that, anyways. So moving past that, what else do you have planned for this year? Is there any exciting news you would like to share kind of going forward? I mean, clearly there's huge news out of Alabama. There's huge news around Texas and Mobile World Congress. What else?
Yeah, we have several very large trials that are about to stand up in Texas, South Carolina, North Dakota, Kansas, Illinois, you know, heartland of America, Oregon, California. The people are very, very interested in this. Our model is very... is a very, very solid model as far as we don't go forward and build a network just and then hope that people come. We build a network based on demand. So our model is working with, you know, distributors, dealers, and partners. We go forward and generate the demand, leverage the technology, deploy a gateway, which we can do in about 4 hours, and, you know, deliver the services.
So question then becomes, you know, you're deploying all over the place. You're also, I feel like it's, where in the world is Pete DeNaghi? Instead of Carmen San Diego, you were in Fargo, you were speaking in St. Louis again, and I feel like you're speaking some other places.
Yeah.
Where are you speaking next?
So far this summer I've been in Savannah, Hilton Head, Spokane, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Fargo, North Dakota, Columbus, Chicago, Alabama soon, all over Texas. And next I will be speaking on September 16th at the NCCA national event in Seattle. So Seattle is my next stop. The good news is I have a little bit of a break before I have to hop on a plane to speak at a conference, although I will be back in Alabama and in Chicago for some meetings therein. And then after that, obviously there's the trip, you know, a little before that, there's the trip to Los Angeles for Mobile World Congress, but I'm not speaking there. And then thereafter, you will see me in Las Vegas as I go to Wispapalooza. as well as the CCA national event, the Competitive Carrier Association national event in Orlando. So Wispapalooza is the Wireless Internet Service Provider Association's national conference. So
changing subject from IoT America real quickly, because you've been an analyst for a long, long time before even doing this.
As a matter of fact, last year marked the 40th anniversary of me learning how to program Fortran on punch cards. Yes.
Holy cow. That's awesome. So, you know, understanding where all of this stuff is going and everything else, do you see other, like you said, WISP providers gaining more traction than the traditional providers that we know today? Do you see like somebody like Orbcomm coming back to relevance? Where do you see those folks going?
Yeah, that's a great question. So WISPs. So right now, the FCC is, they have the Connect America 2 reverse auction going on. And they're doing it based on census blocks. So the census blocks have the ability to go forward and deliver rural connectivity. A lot of WISPs are bidding on that because it's actually quite easy to go forward and instantiate a tower and then connect LTE and or other services to provide, the broadband services without digging up fiber. Obviously, a lot of rural broadband carriers are going forward and doing bidding on that as well. And how a reverse auction works is that you bid on your census blocks. The FCC goes, reviews the bids and says, okay, next round, lower your bid. And at the end of the bidding, the lowest bid per, lowest qualified bid per census block gets the win. So we think that there's a huge opportunity for doing that. There's some play in the white space for providing connectivity. Microsoft's been playing in that space, and there are a lot of people looking at that. 3.5 is getting a lot of play herein. People have been talking about 5G everywhere. So 5G makes a lot of sense in urban America. In rural America, we're going to see what the issues are going to be. Most of the coaching that I've given small companies are, unless you have an I-road going through your territory, like I-80 up north, I-75 through the heartland, I-95 on the East Coast, and you're in rural America, 5G is not going to be a huge concern. However, if you do have one of these roads, by all means, do yourself a favor and start laying the fiber now, because fiber, the fact that, 28 gigahertz and 60 gigahertz propagate poorly, and you'll be needing, there'll be a need for 13 times the tower density as current technologies afford. So there'll be a play for rural companies to go forward and make good money leasing fiber. And the last thing that's going to be very interesting, so obviously T-Mo has launched their NB-IoT service using the 600 megahertz spectrum, which is really good spectrum for IoT because it propagates really well. You'll get 10 or 15 miles out of that spectrum.
Or even in dense building environments.
That's right, because it obviously penetrates exceptionally well.
Right.
So seeing what T-Mo's deployment strategy looks like, as well as paired with the Sprint merger, should be very interesting. Since they have the national license for 600 megahertz, if they can deploy, that's going to be very, very interesting. Additionally, I'll tell you that they've put out some very aggressive price points. They are talking about 50 cents a month for an NB-IoT connection, which is a compelling price point.
That is absolutely fascinating. So then the question becomes, and we're almost out of time. It's been going by so quick. I mean, hey, it's 30 minutes already, and that's crazy. But we can keep on going. There's nothing stopping us. But then the question becomes, where do you see with all of the 5G deployments, right? I was thinking about this. Is NB-IoT brings a lot of things to the edge, and now we're starting to hear this new buzzword, edge compute. So are you guys offering, as IoT America, offering any edge compute services? Or are you seeing any growth in edge compute that makes sense in this kind of realm and field or anything else? Or are you seeing still a lot of connectivity going back up to the cloud and then processing in the cloud?
So I'm going to answer this two ways. I'm going to answer this first from an IoT America standpoint. So we are a latency tolerant, low bandwidth, high gain service. So we are not concerned with edge computing. So basically, we instantiate a gateway, or take the cellular service, connect to broadband, take it up to the cloud, and look at it from the three elements of which how you act on the data, either the historic data, the real-time data, or we put together some predictive data algorithms. Typically, again, doing RESTful API calls into whatever solution that they instantiate. So from an IoT America standpoint, since we're not putting in, a lot of fast broadband or fast connectivity, we're not doing video, right?
No.
So we're not really that concerned with edge computing. Now, from a 5G perspective, of course, since, autonomous vehicle is going to require 5G to have the 1,000 concurrent conversations, as well as the sub-millisecond latency standard connectivity from the car to the tower to the cloud to the tower to the car is going to be insufficient. So edge computing, fog computing, regionally placed data centers, either, by the road or whatnot, are going to be imperative for applications like that to run. Because, you won't be able to have, you don't have enough time to make that decision. The car has to make the decision that in the road, is it a deer or is it a child, right? What do I do? And, the good news, we don't have to worry about too much. Level 5 autonomy based on the NHTSA standard isn't effectively looking to be deployed until 2023. But we are going to have to go and be cognizant of that. And edge computing is going to absolutely, it has to play in that. So you're going to see a lot of, a lot of decentralized data centers, doing real-time quick decisions and then archiving back to a main cloud, deployment.
That's awesome. So I guess the new farmer is going to be more of an IT director than will be actually out there in the fields, it feels like.
Well, so the problem we're solving is there's less land. The farmers are older. There are fewer of them. And by 2050, there'll be 9 billion people in the world, right? So we have a problem. They're not making any more water. They're not making any more land. Natural resources are stressed. So we have to act on it better. We're not looking to make the farmer an IT director. As a matter of fact, what we're trying to do is we're trying to drive the complexity out of IoT deployment. The reason people don't deploy IoT today because, it's hard, right? So we're trying to take it away, the difficulty away from the farmer and make it easy, saying, I want to do irrigation. Here are my solutions. Here are the sensors. Here is how I measure. Here are my deployment partners. And here's my connectivity options.
I will absolutely agree to that. The fridge I have, which I'm a nerd and a geek, and I know how to put wires together. The fridge, connected fridge that I have is absolute garbage when it comes to the app. The fridge works great as a fridge.
Mm-hmm.
But any of the connectivity pieces are absolutely useless.
So we're trying to make it simple because, to your point, farmers, by and large, are not IT directors. They're really smart people. They're the most industrious people on Earth because they have to make it go, right? And they're used to this. I mean, if you look at John Deere as an example, John Deere in their tractors have deployed 14.6 million sensors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have tractors that drive themselves via GPS.
And they have one of the most advanced GPS companies under their name as well, people don't realize.
Right, that's right. And they've been buying, data companies and whatnot. The problem that they have, like everybody else, is they gather the data, they have a large contract with AT&T, they use cellular data, or they go forward when they're at the farmhouse and they download via Wi-Fi. The problem is that in much of rural America, there is no connectivity because there is, you know, there's no justification to deploy LTE infrastructure. Therefore, the data sits on the tractor for a very long time because, you know, large farming equipment doesn't drive back to the barn every day. It sits in the field for days and weeks. And, you know, a large tractor is a small data center. So it actually caches the data, and then when it gets into connectivity, then it downloads the data. Well, it really skews what real time is all about.
Right, and then, I mean, we can go on to the fact that, like, GE always goes, well, we created 1 terabyte of data per engine from New York to LA. Well, I can only imagine how many terabytes that combine has, or that wheat thresher has, or, you know, any of the other large pieces of equipment that John Deere so lovely makes.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, so we're looking at very small bits of data for rural applications, right? And by the way, we haven't talked about oil and gas because we will be doing oil and gas as well. But we're looking at small packets. We're just looking at a boatload of small packets, millions and millions of sensors. And that is another element of big data.
That's a lot. Speaking of which, big data, that's a lot of data. So what else do you plan? Are you the next Ben Franklin and coming out with your next almanac?
Ben Franklin was a wise, wise man. I won't say that we are going to have our next almanac. I think what will end up happening is that we're going to help enable farmers to make really good decisions, because farmers are the biggest gambler that there is in America, right? They are, you know, there's a reason why they call it betting the farm, right? So they bet the farm that their skill and their capabilities and their land, coupled with some good fortune with regard to weather and, you know, and sunlight and rain, will yield a good crop, okay? And, you know, the good news is they do a good job, and everybody does a good job, prices go down. So they're in tough shape. And if, you know, the weather's bad and nobody does a good job, then they don't have enough to pay for the farm. So it's a really healthy balance.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, like I said, we can keep on going, but I think our listeners are wanting to hear more. So they'll come find you at Mobile or Congress. Any mm-hmm. of your speech is coming up, and mm-hmm. I'll definitely put the website up.
Yep, and our website, if you want to write it down, is www.iot-americas.com.
Fantastic. And then also, where can you be found on LinkedIn?
I'm at Pete Denaghy. So it's Denaghy. I just passed 7,500 LinkedIn followers. So, you know, by all means, I'm posting interesting stuff, and we're writing some things as well. I did commit to helping out RCR Wireless with some rural applications and writing. So we'll go from there, and you should be able to find me.
That's exciting. Well, thank you so much. This has been great. And we will hopefully see you out there.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.